I hope this is the talk that you're expecting. If not, you're as tired as I am and came to the wrong room. For the last... Oh, gosh. I echo a lot in here. For the last year and a half, almost 2 years, actually, you know, I was over at Sony Online, makers of EverQuest 2 and many other fine products. I was doing a lot of what I call face work, which is to say... I was going to a heck of a lot of conferences so that Sony would have a presence there. And one nice thing about that is you get to go to all these conferences that you wouldn't normally get to go to. And a whole bunch of the ones that I ended up going to were actually web conferences. How many of you guys consider yourselves web geeks as opposed to game geeks? You should all leave. Nothing here will be new for you. Honestly. On the other hand, if you are web geeks who haven't been paying close attention to games, there actually might be some stuff here that catches you by surprise. If you come out of the straight game side of things, then hopefully this is all like new and baffling and confusing to you. I want to start with setting some context, right, about where the industry is and the way we do things. And some of this might be a little obvious, but I think it's useful just as a contrast. We all know this, right? The video game industry is driven by blockbusters. Mega hits. It's hit or go home, right? Most titles don't earn out. Most titles cost a fortune. AAA titles. Giganto, massive. 100% teams. Blah, 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 blah. This is the thing that I learned the first day I actually had a meeting in the executive room at Sony Online. There was this budget number, and right next to it was the subscriber target. And there was the name of a game, and I said, wow, I don't know if that game can actually hit that subscriber target. And the response was, well, it will, because it costs that much. you know, it didn't jibe for me for quite a while, but that is in fact the logic of how the big media entertainment industry works. Budget dictates audience size, and not the other way around, right? You don't go in saying, oh, this is going to be a mega hit, therefore we'll spend lots against it. You spend lots and therefore say that makes it into a mega hit. And the way in which we accomplish that is by throwing money at the problem. So this is what it took to make a AAA game in 1982 versus an underestimation of what it takes to make a AAA game today. It's about a 70x multiplier. The amount of content that we've had to generate... for a AAA game in 1982 versus a AAA game nowabouts, is on this lovely little ramp. Those first few dots look like they're all the same, and that's because they are 8K, 16K, and 32K. Whereas now here we are, and we're arguing about whether or not it's a good idea for Xbox Live to go to 50 meg and 100 meg, and yeah, things have ballooned, we all know that. Along with it have ballooned the budgets, right? So I went and interviewed a whole bunch of friends who've been doing games for a really long time, and I asked them, AAA game, you know, don't go crazy, not one of the ones that overspend, just how much does it, did it, would it, could it cost? And they gave me this graph, and I didn't even bother trying to go down into the 80s on that one because the bars were too small, really, so it wasn't really worth it. But honestly, I'm starting to worry that the estimates for 05 were a little low, because now we hear, you know, Lost Planet said 20 million, I believe, and another 20 in marketing. And we heard Mark Rain, always reliable for a good quote, say, well, if they'd only used Unreal, they could have chopped it down to 10. Which, you know, making that sound like it's somehow economical is a little amazing. Especially since he didn't actually count how much it cost to build Unreal 3 in the first place. So the thing about this is that it ties in with a particular model of entertainment, which I call the open big model, right? So this is the graph of sales per day of every game launched. It also happens to be the graph of attendees per day of every movie that comes out. And so on down the line, right? You open big thanks to this giant marketing push, right? And then day on day on day, you slip on down the tail of this graph. And pretty soon, you're selling nothing or next to nothing. And the thing about this is that people are coming to this title, whatever it is, a game, a movie, or whatever, because they're being driven to it by marketing, right? They don't know what it is in advance except what we tell them, the trailers, the whatever. Which is why this whole industry built around giving you this initial perception of what things are. So, you know, when you look, for example, at the movie industry, everybody's coming out in the first weekend. First weekend grosses are the things that you always see reported in the news. And what that means is that nobody's had the chance to talk about the movie yet and actually assess whether it's any goddamn good. People show up based on whether the trailer was good. And then if the movie sucked, the curve just falls off really quick. These days, it actually falls off really, really quick, as Jiggly discovered to its dismay when people turned on their cell phones during the first showing. That means that even industry people think that there isn't really much of a relationship between how many people turn out to see a movie and how good it is, right? Because we're driven by the marketing and not the actual quality of the eventual product. This, of course, is what we really want, right? It would be nice if the far end of this, the low end, started big to begin with. But this is what's called a J-curve, right? This is a viral growth kind of thing. And this is what you really want to have, something that starts building slowly and then gains steam because people love it, right? You could call this a love curve. They tell other people that it's awesome and more people show up. And more and more and more. Now, the thing about how OpenBig works economically, right? And yeah, I know I'm a designer, but I'm still going to throw lots of business crap at you today. Is that it relies on that first weekend, you know, basically earning back the nut, right? If you open big, if you actually get big as what you hit, then you'll make a lot of money. And then everything after that, you can actually probably calculate the fall off, right? And say, okay, we'll earn out. Now, in the movie business, they have all kinds of complicated ways to do this, but more importantly, they have a whole bunch of other ways to make money that the game industry doesn't. So I'm just going to walk you through this. I highly recommend you track down this book, because I am goddamn sick and tired of people comparing our industry to the movie industry. So you need to read this book to learn why the movie industry has it all over us. Okay? They know their shit and we don't. And they are, so Sony Online, owned by a movie studio, I got to take lots of movie meetings. Damn. You know, these guys have it down to a science, right? Who funds the movies? Suckers. People who think that they want to be in movies because they're rich and it gets them into the parties in LA. They get the money from these guys. They're promised that they will get paid back when they earn out. This money is then farmed out by the studios to independent production companies who all have sweetheart deals. That's what it means to have an office on the lot, right? They all have sweetheart deals in order to develop something. And the indie studios, by the way, aren't. They're all actually owned by the big studios. There's no such thing as a North American independent movie. You know, if you've heard of the label that's on the front of it, it didn't actually come independent. That's a marketing brand. So then this goes to the studio who puts this package together with the producers and this and that and the other, and they all get deals where they get points off of the performance, if they're powerful enough, of the movie in the end. The thing is, then the movie studio sells it to a distributor, who is actually another arm of the same giant mega company that they belong to. And then this distributor puts it out there by giving it to the movie theaters. The movie theaters would also belong to the same giant mega corporation if Congress hadn't made them not do that a few decades ago. Otherwise, it would still all be the same people. So they're selling it to themselves each time under terms so that it always looks like they're taking a bath on it. Then eventually, after it ends its theatrical release, they put it on the pay-per-view channel, which is owned by the same media company, and they sell those rights to themselves, and then they sell them rights to themselves again to move it down onto HBO, then they sell those rights to themselves again for the cable company, then they sell those rights to themselves again for broadcast TV, and then the best one is they actually have a little cartel for international distribution where all of the studios have partnered together to be the international distributors, so then they sell it to themselves for the rest of the world. Along the way, they always sell it in such a way that the movie goes further into the red. That way they never have to pay back the funders, a.k.a. suckers. So in the end, the people who had points on the actual performance at the beginning do okay. But you know, if you ask to look at the books, most of the movies actually don't do that well. And it's such a hard business. And, you know, yeah, right. Pearl Harbor, $500 million worldwide, right? Most movies actually do earn out. Otherwise, Hollywood wouldn't be around anymore. We have none of that shit. None of it, right? We don't even have the sucker funders. So we certainly don't have that immensely long tail of subsidiary revenue from just reselling and repackaging the same content. And we didn't even get into toy licenses, lunch boxes, posters on the wall, or any of that other crap. That was just the movie. And let's face it, games probably will never have that kind of infrastructure for numerous reasons, technical reasons, obsolescence reasons, and so on. And we'll see some gestures towards it, XBLA, GameTap, and so on. But you know, we're a long way from having this kind of 100-year-old infrastructure. So this is my chance to drop the blazer and give you a little design digression about one way in which that's massively different for us, because I really shouldn't just spend my time talking about money. You all know this game? You are not awake. You all know this game. Okay. Ignoring the fact that there's two screens, how many players does it support? Good. And what is the difference between what player A and player B does? Zero. And in fact, most games that you've ever played sitting around a table are like that, right? Most players are doing the same thing. I call this a symmetric game. I told you this was the game design digression. You know this game?
Yes.
We have two players here. One of them happens to be the CPU. Do they play the same game? This is an asymmetric game. The video game industry has been in the business of making asymmetric games, right? What we've done, frankly, the stuff that the player A does, the guy at the bottom, isn't particularly different between this and Far Cry. Right? You move, you shoot. Take cover. Gears of War. Sorry, Cliffy. You didn't actually invent that. Right? So, you know, that part hasn't changed. What's actually changed is the aliens. The aliens are way cooler these days. But that means that's where we spend our money, is in making cooler aliens. This actually led to me getting in a fair amount of trouble. Because I said that single-player games were a historical aberration a while back. What I meant by that is, barring some things like Fox and Geese and Solitaire, the default mode of playing games throughout human history, you know, thousands of years now, has actually been symmetric games. But that meant that the games could be made fairly cheaply, right? Now that we're caught in the world of asymmetric games, where one side gets a giant amount of budget and player A gets a tiny amount of budget, what ends up happening is that we keep driving up the costs on the aliens. So I know you guys knew that, but it's really important, because what I was getting at by that statement that single-player gaming was an aberration was that we are actually giving up on that aberration, right? We're in the process of getting rid of that. And what we are doing is actually, well, there's the quote, but what we're doing is taking everything that used to be an asymmetric game and turning it back into a symmetric game. Because now you're no longer playing against the aliens, right? You're actually playing against your buddy on your friends list who has a goddamn higher gamer score than you because he has no life. So I call that a parallel asymmetric game. Not that you care, unless you're the kind of person who uses my book in their classes. But what's going on there is that we're moving everything back into kind of an older mode, right? We're going back into this world of connectivity and so on. The problem is we're dragging the giant budgets behind us, which is kind of bizarre if you think about it, if the real point is for player A to go head-to-head with player B. So the weird thing about this is that this world of connectivity has actually encouraged this whole new shift, right? So I picked two people that I consider publishers here at Random, one of them being THQ. You all know THQ? How many of you have heard of jaysgames.com? Jaysgames.com is, for my money, has better penetration into the marketplace than THQ. What are they? They're a blog that gathers up casual games. Right? And it's interesting to see what this multiplayer context of forced connectivity, shared profiles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, is doing to the shifting landscape Because Jay's Games' budget is like nothing compared to how much money THQ spends, right? Jay's Games is just aggregating. So what we're seeing is this really interesting shift where stuff is just changing now. And, you know, everybody's been talking about the death of PC games, when in fact PC games are the fastest growing segment of the industry. It's just in a segment of the industry that we don't think is in the industry, if you know what I mean, right? It's growing in all these areas that we don't even have a way to count. So it's sort of a weird thing, because the way this is working on the web, right, where are those Jay's Games games coming from? And the answer is, they're not coming from professional game developers. They're coming from grassroots kinds of people. So Yahoo actually found a really cool pattern that they saw. And actually, this is the same damn pattern that we found in how many people had good quality houses in Ultima Online and in Swig and, you know, all the rest, right? Which is, most content's crap, Sturgeon's Law, right? So 90% of people won't even try to make any. 10% will try, and only 10% of that will be any damn good. And what Yahoo found is that, hey, even on Yahoo groups, 90% of people only read the mailing list, 10% will post, and 1% will start a mailing list and moderate it. And this seems to just carry through everywhere, right? And that 1% is actually where people like Jay's Games are getting those games to put on their lists. And this is a very, very weird and interesting shift if you happen to be working at a major game developer or publisher, right? Because that 1%, a lot of it is as good as you are, and there are more of them than there are of you. So just economies of scale start making this an odd proposition. At this point, the amount of participation that's going on in the internet is astronomical. So Pew published an internet report that said 50 million Americans are currently creating web content. But they didn't even count all the kinds of content that are created. They didn't include reviews on Amazon. They didn't include giving somebody a star on eBay, okay? And you got to realize, a star on eBay seems like a trivial thing to you. A star on eBay is worth a shitload of money to eBay because they own it, right? They own this database that defines how valuable everything is, right? They're building this database. That's their proprietary, you know, their value. If you included rating a picture on Flickr, right, I think we'd actually see that all of a sudden that Yahoo pyramid with the 90% is probably 90% of the population of the country. Because everybody's freaking rating a picture on Flickr or mailing around an email joke. This is a really weird shift if you're from big media. Because big media has relied on experts broadcasting content out to the unwashed masses who can't hack it. All right, let me shift here a little bit again. LostGarden.com, wonderful, wonderful game design blog, if you guys don't know about it, written by a guy named Dan Cook. He pointed out that the interesting thing that goes on here is that where that leaves us, right, the game development experts, is that since our budgets keep going up to make cooler and cooler aliens, right, we have to keep increasing the budgets, thereby, well, kind of getting more conservative, right? If it gets that expensive, we can't take as many risks. And if the budgets keep inflating with the prettier and prettier aliens, pretty soon you might actually exceed the size of the audience that justifies the budget. And what happens then isn't, well, let's spend less on war games. It's, let's stop making war games, adventure games, puzzle games, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? I mean, this has happened over and over and over again. We just stop doing it because there's just not enough shelf space and it doesn't make sense in terms of opportunity cost to keep making those older games. So the result of that is actually that we kill genres. We kill our babies. We do it over and over again. Honestly, you all laughed when I mentioned Far Cry, and it's because we all know perfectly well that Far Cry is the same goddamn game as Counter-Strike, is the same goddamn game as Unreal, is the same goddamn game as Quake, Doom, on back into history. Game design-wise, the innovations are really small, right? Every once in a while, along comes something that just blows it open, and then we get this, which is a new genre of game. And it goes up until somebody spends too much money. Blizzard, I'm looking at you. And kills the genre. Because then nobody else can trump them. The other interesting thing about it is, and Dan makes this distinction, right, between, you know, the people who are essentially innovative creators and craftsmen, right? Craftsmen are the people who know how to incredibly elaborately build one thing. And they're really, really good at it, right? And they can just refine the hell out of it. When the craftsmen rule, the genre dies. Because, you know, it's all about established practice, right? The fancy academic word is the praxis, right? So this is an interesting issue for us, and, you know, it's not exactly a new one. So I'm going to get even more academically geeky on you and throw some stuff that my friend Bruce Sterling wrote in this extremely cool and yet also extremely geeky book about design. Not game design, but about product design, called Shaping Things. He said, you know, there's only a certain number of kinds of things that people design. The first one is things that are made by hand, used by hand, and each one is a unique little confection, right? Once upon a time, everything in the world was this way, right? Every chair you could sit on, every table, every necklace the lady wore, everything, right? But we're a long way from that because eventually we invented something called machines. These might have complexity, they might be powered, and now people who use them are customers instead of just us. You know, when you're in the artifact realm, everybody makes their own stuff. Yeah, then machines turn into products. And products, actually, we use products every day. They're a pretty recent invention. They only date from World War I. And this is where we take the one that worked and we make lots of it. And now we're talking about consumers. And I suggest to you that all video games today are products. And we treat all of our users like consumers. Not particularly shocking. The bad news is there's more stages beyond that. So, for example, I have this in my pocket, right? It's a gizmo. We're probably all fans of gizmos because we're all techno geeks. This thing is more interface than object, says Bruce. Yep. It's highly featured, a little too much. It crashes a lot. It's user alterable because I can run Archon and Mule on it. Yes, I do. And now I'm an end user. You know, we don't really even do this with games right now. Much less do we go to the cool thing that he calls spines, which mostly don't exist yet, which are objects that are transparently networked and they all track history and do all kinds of stuff. To most of the web world, you are a spine. Okay? Every move you make, every breath you take, everything you do is being recorded. You are broadcasting your habits. You are broadcasting what you do, where you go, what you like, right? You are, you know, a packet in the network. People wrangle you. Now, of course, Bruce, well, he's a science fiction writer, so he says eventually we're all going to turn into bioorganic robots of some sort. But the thing about this is that it's interesting to me that we've climbed not very far on this ladder in games. Well, in fact, the world around us is like diving headlong into spime land, right? And frankly, their odds are pretty good that there are a few people in this room who are partially biot, right? Anybody who's got some implants or some hearing aids or ever had a transplant of some sort, maybe they got a metal rod in their leg. I mean, come on, we're getting closer. So I present all of this, a highly geeky design theory, in order to bring you to the actual content of my presentation. You'll notice the little tabs are changing up at the top. So here we are finally at what is Web 2.0. All of those of you who already know what Web 2.0 is can go to sleep because you were already forwarded this video. But this is a really cool video, and so we're going to watch it because it actually explains what Web 2.0 and the way in which we are all changing and how it might affect us. Thank you. That does not look like our games at all, does it? It's a really good video. Clap for it. I didn't do it. So, you guys know this kind of like in your head because you probably use that every day, right? Let's face it, it's taken over the world. But boy, that list of approaches, mashup, yeah, I don't think the media companies like that very much. How about all the user participation stuff? How about all of the rethinking governance? Whoa, you know, that does not sound very much like, well, it does sound like a phone, but it doesn't sound very much like the way in which we open big, right? It's a radically different approach to everything. As it turns out, a guy named Tim O'Reilly, who likes to coin catchy phrases so they can build conferences around them, very smart guy, sat down one day and actually wrote a piece called What is Web 2.0, in which he identified the core principles. And what this talk, finally, is actually about is listing those principles so we can figure out whether or not the hell we can actually adapt the games industry to them, because I think it's a safe bet that the trends exemplified on the web today are going to win in the long run, as opposed to centralized broadcast, you know, badass content creators only get to own everything and send it out to you and you consume it passively in your chair, much like I am doing to you with this talk. So, there's the list, and we're going to run through them in a variety of ways. Classifying stuff, right? You guys have now seen this everywhere. Yes? Tag Cloud? Familiar with it? It's actually a triumph of info visualization. Because what it is telling you is what things people find most interesting out of this big mess and what they don't find as interesting. But at the same time, it replaces the concept of categories. You don't need categories anymore because everybody just tags words on. This is fundamental to the web. This is how you find anything in a world of user content. There's this premise that you get everybody to do stuff for you. They're doing it for themselves because they want to, and it makes it better for everybody else. Right? Which is, of course, what Spore is trying to pull off, you know, the great content scam. You know, it's the Amway of games. Right? Come on, make a critter. We'll just quietly give it to everybody else, right? This concept here, not writing, reading, and arithmetic, but the new R's, which are ratings, rankings, and reputation, which are one of the first things, actually, that we have started to steal. Witness Xbox Live, right? Actually stole this pretty effectively a while ago. The interesting thing about this is that you don't own this, right? eBay does. So all of this accreted data surrounding your profiles is stored in their database. This is actually the core tactic of Web 2.0 companies, is to acquire this data and hang on to it because it's what makes them worth money. Decentralizing things instead of having it all come from one source, right? Boy, this is like the antimatter to the publishing industry in every single category, right? Because what it does is say, there ain't no publisher. Everybody on BitTorrent is a publisher, at least if they don't forget to close the window when they're done. You guys know how BitTorrent works, yes? Yeah. Yes?
Yes.
Gotta keep checking here. Then there's this concept, which is also really alien to big media, and by which I mean the game industry, right? Radically trusting users. Exemplified by Wikipedia. You know, if you'd said 10 years ago, the best encyclopedia in the world will be written by random people who know jack shit about what they're writing about, right, you would be laughed out of the room. And yet, Wikipedia is in fact the best encyclopedia in the world. It is deeper and more thorough than Britannica. And this has been statistically verified by people with way too much time on their hands. The idea that, this is kind of a complicated, tangled bit, but that you don't write these big, complicated systems of code. What you actually want is these rich databases, right? The value isn't in your cool software. The value is actually in all of the stuff that's been dumped into it and shaken up and then poured out, shake and bake style, right? This is, you guys know what, why, do you know why Amazon is so freaking important? ASIN. You guys know those four letters? You've seen them? So the book publishing industry had this great idea, which was we need to keep track of all the books because there's just a shitload of books being published. So they came up with this thing called ISBN. Okay? And all that did was assign a unique number to a book so you could keep track of it. Well, Amazon, an internet bookseller, said, that sounds like a really good idea, but we want to sell other stuff too. So they actually built on top of ISBN and extended it to every product category there is. And today, all industries are quickly moving towards using ASIN, which is owned by Amazon, as the way to find anything. Okay, because it's just the most useful way to do it. Because ASINs have a whole bunch of extra stuff attached to it, which was mostly written by you. Right? So the value came from someplace else. Look at what Google is doing. Google owns no data. Right? What they have is data about data. Neat trick. And that's actually what turned out to be really valuable, because that's what they monetize with AdSense, is data about data, rather than being the actual information people are searching for. How do these companies work from a production point of view? Well, you have to be co-developers because you're actually writing the database. You're writing all the entries in the database. They don't work at all the way media companies do. Not in the least, especially not video games. They throw all kinds of stuff away. 80% of tested features. And look at that pace, okay? Look how fast they do this. Let me have an idea. Let's launch it 2 weeks from now. Anybody currently on a 3-year death march? Oh, come on, none of you? Oh, anybody currently on a 3-year well-scheduled project? Read that bottom line. It's a real number. Wouldn't you like to patch your game every half hour? Can you even conceive of patching your game every half hour? It's astonishing, but that is the pace at which these guys do, in fact, work. And in fact, not only do they work at this rate, but they do it often. They will issue those releases and patch it 5 different ways and then watch the ways in which they're being used. The other thing about the web, of course, is that everybody can just stick stuff together from absolutely anywhere. You guys all play Goggles? It is a flight sim game where you can fly over the Google Maps API. Go find your neighborhood, fly over it. You can even crash into your house if you want. Lastly, unlike us, right, what do media companies do? They freak out over Mickey Mouse being painted illegally on the side of a preschool. What do web companies do? They say, cool, and they feature you on their site. Very, very different approach, right? They make no assumptions about what you're using their stuff for. They don't actually care. They figure it's more value. The more ways it's being used, the better, right? So this here is the alleged market value of my blog. I disbelieve, unless any of you want it. Technorati has no idea that they were doing this. And they don't care, but they thought it was really damn cool. Free ads. That can be done because of something called Small Pieces Loosely Joined, famous book by Dave Weinberger. This right here actually kind of sums up the way games aren't. So not Small Pieces Loosely Joined. The way we build Gothic cathedrals, right? Take out one buttress, the whole thing goes to shit. It's funny because in the 90s, a whole bunch of really smart people spent a long time trying to develop all these really cool standards to make things talk to each other, like SOAP and CORBA and all of that really cool stuff, and none of it gets used today. At all. What gets used? Spitting out text files. Because it was fast and easy, and everybody can stage it up in 5 minutes. And as a result, all of these websites are built on staging up little text files. Everything, all of it, Amazon, all of it, right? This cool thing called the LAMP stack. Every single piece of the LAMP stack was actually built by people like you who said, wow, I want to change this little bit, and they stuck it together. And thus we got Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. And it's all open, and you can hack it any way you want. Not the way we build our games either. They also make no assumptions about what you're playing on. Just you try playing PS3 Home on your 360, right? But in the web world, it's like the internet is the platform. We don't care what you watch it on. That's why I have a browser on my phone. I don't think I'll be logging into PS3 Home from my phone. A different approach, right? Another core idea is this wisdom of crowds thing, which is the idea that what you want to do is get as many people as possible, and it doesn't matter how stupid they are. Neat trick. If I had a big old jar of beans here, and I asked all of you to estimate how many beans were in the jar, every single one of you would be wrong, and the average of your answers would be accurate to within 1%. That is this weird phenomenon called the wisdom of crowds. The web exploits the hell out of this kind of phenomenon via idea markets, odds making, all kinds of methods of data accumulation, collaborative consensus, Wikipedia, etc., etc., etc. Great, great, great book called Wikinomics that you might want to check out. And then there's this biggie, which is this whole long tail concept. Anybody read this book? Any business person who has not read this book is obsolete. I mean this. Go read this book. I don't know if the bookstore here has it, but if not, they should. The whole thing here is, you know, hits are getting bigger in one important axis, money, but also a hit movie reaches more people today than in the history of the world, which is really cool. But as a percentage of the population, hits today have the lowest penetration in human history. Do you know how many people each night watched I Love Lucy? What percentage of the audience? It was over 70%. Can you think of anything going on in the world today that 70% of the world is paying attention to? Sure as hell isn't the Democratic primaries. It isn't lost, well, it isn't even lost last season. It's not Heroes this season. A hit show today thanks its lucky stars to get 13%. Right? The world is fragmented. Never mind Springsteen's 57 channels. I literally have over 500. Everybody's watching their own little things because, God knows, somebody keeps that fifth Discovery Channel in operation. So, since I play guitar, this is my moment to do my second digression of the day. Ironically, we used to work this way because we didn't have broadcast. Once upon a time, if I played guitar, I had to play for crowds of no larger than this because those were all the people who lived within walking distance of where I was. But then we got these broadcast methods, and the first one was actually the printing press, right? And it went out there and allowed other people to kind of copy what I was doing. And this is also the first place that the IP wars started big time with the predecessor to the recording industry of America who wants to sue you. And then it wasn't until we actually had global broadcast that we really got today's concept of stars, right? Because before that, stardom was local. This changed everything, and this here, this global broadcast kind of setup, is actually what created the modern IP culture, right? Which did not exist as recently as 100 years ago. It just didn't exist, right? Stars were like, oh yes, I have heard that there's that Caruso guy who's really cool, but you didn't have any personal experience of it. So ironically, what's happening today is that what this actually does is make it so that there's way less diversity on the market, because let's face it, you know how there are probably within a 20 block radius of here. Hell, I just walked by this amazing dude with a hammer dulcimer with bows on his fingers out there. 50 years ago, he would have been huge. I'm serious. He's like this freaking virtuoso, and he is panhandling on the street. Right? And that's because content, you know, people work really, really hard, and there are too damn many talented people in the world. So the cool things we make are really worthless. And it's thanks to the fact that everything is available everywhere. Put these numbers in perspective, okay? Train, kind of a popular band a while back. 62,000 measly copies to debut at number one? Barry Manilow was number one, though. 156. These are not huge figures compared to what we sell. But look what happened with this long tail play called iTunes. Right? Do that math. Whoa. We're going to see more and more and more of this, right? And we're already facing it because digital distribution ate the music industry. It's taken some good hard bites out of television and movies, and it's going to swallow us in another couple of years, right? The long tail things, how many of you use Netflix? So if you've read Long Tail, or if you've been to any of Chris Anderson's presentations, you know this stat. Netflix carries a whole bunch of really obscure shit. And most movies they have rent at least once a month. I mean everything rents once a month. Somebody wants absolutely everything, even the total crap. Right? That's the definition of long tail. So we go back to Bruce. That was Web 2.0. How do we get this into our games? One big thing is, how do we do this? Right? How do we generate tons and tons of stuff so that we can apply what many in the content business call a shit filter in order to identify the stuff that somebody might actually want? Well, it's a hard problem, right? It's not a production methodology that we are used to, because since we are designed to open big with giant budgets, we therefore must plan everything in advance really carefully. Most industries on Earth use this, which is launch a kabillion little things, try them at an early stage, kill most of them, and repeat, rinse, until there's a couple of good ones, and then they throw those out and half of them fail anyway. But even StageGate is, you know, never mind Waterfall, never mind even Agile, right? Okay, those are still let's work for 3 years kinds of methods. The web goes way faster even than this. If you think about it, the way the web did it is that they throw out a feature, they don't even really design it. They just toss it out there, see what lives, see what dies, and they bring it in. They'll implement a feature 10 times at once and throw all of them out. And then they watch obsessively to check the metrics to see what works. Whereas we build design documents that actually bear no relevance to the game we're making. And we pretend that it's actually a roadmap. The way we've tried to get around this is this production methodology, you know, the GTAR and the VTAR, the vertical slices, the Cerny method, whatever. Pretty much a lot like a sample chapter and outline from a book. The idea here is we come up with the aliens and the little dude, and we try to build the whole game of just that, as polished as we can. And then we say, ah, we licked the problem, and we hand it over to the production team and say, now make lots more kinds of aliens. Right? So we try to scope down the actual hard part to the least innovative piece possible. Minimize our risk. You compare this to the way the web works. We'll work on something for 2-3 weeks, then spend 2 days fine-tuning it. Dogster, by the way, is worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Don't you feel stupid now. Ironically, we do have a way to do this in the game industry. There was this, don't bother trying to read it, just go look up How to Prototype a Game in 7 Days. Wonderful article that was on Gamma Sutra that basically ignores every single piece of production wisdom that's been handed to you in the Game Developers Conference for the last 10 years. It says stuff like, the art doesn't matter. Quit doing focus groups on it. It says stuff like, you know, build a toy first, prototype lots, brainstorming is a waste of time. Now, completely antithetical to the way we actually do game development today. The way the web actually works this is that they will literally take a feature. Let's say you're working on some cool web mashup with Google Maps and little dots on the screen, and you want to know which dot, little flag on the map is the best one. In the game industry, we would ask our art director to design the little flag, then we would focus group it, then marketing would have their say, and then the CEO would override them, and then it would go out. What the web would do is say, you get flag 1, you get flag 2, you get flag 3, you get flag 4 each time you log in, and we'll just log them. And after about 7 hours of data, we'll pick flag 3. How do we even do that with our games? The answer is certainly not with current production methods. So, other issues with this, you know, this setup of doing things is, of course, that everybody's contributing stuff all the time. How many of you have heard of the copybot controversy in Second Life? So with people contributing stuff all the time, the thing that really came through really quickly is the whole bits want to be free. Everybody's IP was kind of up for grabs because it was streamed down to you. You could capture it and then re-upload it, and pretty soon everybody had everything. It's kind of like the Star Trek replicator universe where the entire economy collapsed and they live in a perfect communist paradise. You know, radical trust, remember? This law is becoming obsolete. And it's becoming obsolete because the notion is that the system is self-healing anyway. And frankly, bits just want to be free and content is worth nothing. And that's a pretty freaky notion for those of us in a content-generating industry. This is the bottom line. So there's one thing the web makes possible. It's rendering all of us obsolete as professional content creators. Because in fact, no matter how damn good you are at your job, there's somebody better at it out there. And a hell of a lot of them are posting their stuff for free on TurboSquid. Or, what's the other one? Oh, there's so many. CSS ZenGarden. There's so many sites where this stuff is going up. Everybody is creating stuff, and the question is what, right? The thing is, we've always assumed that we are creators of a particular type of content. So we put it out there, and people buy it. But in fact, everybody has their little areas of expertise, and probably everybody's really badass at something. It's just a question of what it is. So as long as there's some way to get all that stuff back in, into the network, the system that everybody else is using, you know, your stuff is probably going to start falling by the wayside. So it's a little worrisome in a business model where you're trying to make money off of selling that stuff, right? This was demonstrated really painfully to Xbox Live when the really, really awesome Geometry Wars Retro Evolved went up and everybody loved it to death. And within 48 hours, there were not only were there a half dozen pixel-perfect clones available on the web, but some of them were better. And 48 hours and they were better, right? That's the power of that collective intelligence. One of the things that this broadcast model tends to assume, we have this picture of the drooling people in front of the cathode ray tube. And it's encouraged, frankly, by this model of thinking that we're always broadcasting out. And it's wrong. Users are not stupid is one of the core lessons of the web. And it's an easy lesson to forget when you're sitting in a call center taking your calls because they, you know, use their CD-ROM as a coaster or whatever it was, right? It's really a question of whether they're investing in what you're doing or whether they spend their brain cells on different problems. Now, granted, most user content sucks. But the web has actually accommodated that using those tags and using those databases that they've put together. Right? They found ways to find and surface the best stuff. Have you guys all used Pandora? Yes, Pandora has, it basically kills the radio station dead, right? I mean, someday this is it. Why would you let XM or Sirius or XM plus Sirius, because I hear they're merging, why would you let them decide what music you like in a given category when this figures it out based on what else you listen to using cool algorithmic stuff and database? The trick the web is trying to master here is we've always said it's 1% of creators do the content. How many Flickr users do content? 100%. And the reason is because the barrier is so damn low. Anybody can take a picture. Right? So the trick here is actually they're broadening the base. And when they broaden the base, the 1% gets really, really, really big. And then all kinds of cool stuff starts surfacing. What does all this mean to us? Well, the first thing we need to recognize, that cool curve going up at the 12 million and the, you know, however many gigabytes and whatever, that's just screwed. The next spot on that graph, I mean, what is the next spot on that graph? Where are you putting your development team if that number doubles, triples, or if it stays on that curve, if it goes up by another 70x in the next, you know, what is the generation after this one? It's just not sustainable, right? I mean, it's just insane. We can't actually do that. There's certainly no way that we could get enough money from an audience to pay for it. Do we honestly think that console games are going to suddenly gain 70x penetration? No. There aren't that many people in the world. Literally. We also learned that the value isn't in these fixed sets of bits that we sell on these discs, right? That's not what it is. In music, it's lying in performance, right? That's what the musicians are having to resort to, is concerts to make their money, because the CDs are a loss leader, right? Anything fixed is a loss leader. And performance means service, community management, interaction with consumers. lifestyle branding, right? It means, I hate to use the really geeky ad term, love marks, right? Apple is a love mark. We love Apple. This has led, if you haven't noticed, this is just one of the, 20 dozen YouTube for games sites that have launched in the last couple of months. And, you know, frankly, if I were a publisher, I'd be really freaking scared of YouTube for games sites. Because odds are they're going to start popping up with better shit than Pogo. Actually, they already have better shit than Pogo. Honestly. And if it's not Kongregate that floats your boat, go check out Pageo.com. Go check out GameGum. There's no shortage. I mean, just wander off. You'll find stuff catering to every niche. Play your little puzzle game, tag it, rate it, chat with other people playing it right there on the site. And they're building their database. The irony in all of this is that other people get it better than we do. NCSoft, Sony Online, hello, where have you been? Viacom's published more MMOs in the last 6 months than you have. And they're doing it straight on the web. They're not putting it in a box. Bits in a box is obsolete. We should have quit doing it quite a while ago. The thing that this is doing is making people not see all of the cool shit that's happening under the radar. WoW's the biggest MMO around here is parts, right? You think you know. You all know the top. What are the top MMOs going today in the West? Heard of Webkinz? Does that number catch you by surprise? Seen these in the stores lately? You want to be really depressed? How much did WoW spend? Yeah. Here's the thing. What the web is teaching us, okay? This whole big media model, it's in kind of a pickle. We should be asking ourselves even what the platform holders are thinking about this. Because PS3 Home, Xbox Live, Live on the Windows desktop, you know, that to me says that people are making a play to take GameStop out of business, right? And the question, you know, those of you who are developers should be asking is, well, okay, I'm swapping one publisher for a very different kind of publisher. In what ways is that going to affect things? And the casual games guys know this to a T, right? Because let's face it, all these portals are actually some of the largest game publishers in the world today. And you have to start asking yourself, how do you actually derive the value? Because, again, you're monetizing the love mark. You're monetizing the affection your audience has for you, not the cool shit you made. The cool shit you made is the loss leader. Right? What you're monetizing is the way they like you because you're cool to them. Consoles are actually having to cope with this now because they have to either come up with cool shit that nobody else can do, like something that you can't actually put on a disc and just copy, right? That's the Wii's approach, turning into a very specialized sort of appliance. Or they have to turn into general-purpose PCs in sheep's clothing, right? Because otherwise, they have no way to interact with this stuff. They actually, what's happening is, in response to this, consoles have to either close down more or open up more, right? And we should expect to continue seeing this happening across the business in general. Either increased closing down or way, way, way increased opening up. This is the new business model. You drive by loyalty. You monetize loyalty. You create exclusivity via clubs. You target demographically because you know absolutely everything about everybody who plays your games. You know how many times they press the jump button and why. We don't instrument our games that way. The web guys absolutely do instrument their websites that way. Believe you me, they log an insane amount of data. They know everything about you. We're going to see lots and lots more long-tail plays. And the thing about the long-tail plays, long-tails do not play nice with big budgets. And in the long term, in long tail scenarios, what tends to win is actually the lower budgets. Because in aggregate, lots of low budget things actually rack up more sales than the hits do, which fall off quickly. A big reason for that is that hits have to be broadly targeted. Broadly targeted stuff is moderately appealing to a lot of people. Highly targeted stuff is incredibly appealing to a few people. And something incredibly appealing is worth more money to those people. So what you end up with is these hits that are bland, right? Whereas the long tail stuff is rich and highly targeted, and you can charge way the hell more than you can for a hit. So you build a portfolio of niche titles instead. We need to just let go of this whole obsession with selling object, like physical crap, right? It's obsolete. You know, bits are what we traffic in. And we need to just accept that the bits aren't actually worth much money, no matter how much we spent to make them. They're infinitely replicable, just like the copybot problems in Second Life. What is of value, by the way, is always the server-side data. This is an incredibly noisy world. How the hell do you stick out? Well, this is something the game industry currently despises, although the other media don't have much of a problem with. The answer is, you need famous people. Because personalities are what, in the end, people attach to. What is Apple without Steve Jobs? We actually got to see it. It wasn't pretty. Right? And it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens in this extremely noisy world when we have people who are, you know, good content creators, but cannot shape their celebrity in a way in order to stick out from the crowd. Because the publishers are going to get drowned out no matter how much money they spend. Illustrative Story, one of the absolute biggest stars the week immediately preceding the launch of MTV was Christopher Cross. Unfortunately, he was 30 pounds overweight and balding. Christopher Cross's music career died the day after Video killed the radio star because he could not parlay his celebrity into the new world. Very, very similar issue is going to happen. You know, we're going to be seeing the rise of these celebrity teams because you have to have something that's a love mark. And EA is not a cuddly name. Ironically, they were the ones who had this idea first and ditched it way, way long ago. This is a really important point. We think games are content. Number of bytes of content in Pong. You all fell asleep again, didn't you? Thank you. Games are systems. All the little pictures of aliens are the content that is becoming less and less valuable on the market. Right? We actually have something incredibly powerful, which is the systems. That's what we need to leverage. That is what the web leverages. Even our games which are built for modding, which are built systemically, suck at absorbing content. Anybody tried making a model to put in Neverwinter Nights? Web's built on databases. We're not. But our models are built to sit on top of databases, as anybody's ever built an RPG knows. We need to embrace that, because the databases long-term are where the value is. And these need to be databases that live on our end so that we can monetize, track the users, and be all big brother on their ass. Because that is where the value is coming from. I grant you, this is an incredibly Orwellian kind of world. If you're scared about that, I encourage you to read David Brin, The Transparent Society, another very important book of the last few years. Key lesson, bite-sized chunks. We build cathedrals. We need to start building windows and archways and little bits that stick together in interesting ways, because bite-sized chunks are what are working. And we see that even in the mainstream game industry, bite-sized chunks are what are working. Everybody's so caught by surprise by Xbox Live Arcade. We shouldn't be, because the most common scenario these days for a teenager to pick up a game is to play it on their phone. It's really, really teeny tiny bite size, and it doesn't have high production values. My kids pick up Pong to play it, right alongside Viva Piñata. They don't give a damn what it looks like, because they have grown up in a media landscape where presentation is highly variable. Those of us who only think AAA are actually missing out on the vast majority of the landscape. But we love overcomplication. We love building this big, giant thing. So much that we think that consoles are the mainstream gaming industry, which is nuts. Consoles are not mainstream. Mainstream is grandma. Most websites pick one thing and do it well. And here we are building these giant cathedrals that try to do all of these complicated things all at once. These complex artifacts, right? And then what goes viral? Snood. You all played Snood?
Oh, yes.
You know how much money the Snood guy makes? You really don't want to know. Because it's a lot more digits than my salary, that's for sure. What the web is managed. You know, you go to a web expo. I literally had this experience. It was terrifying. They sat down and they said, we're going to run a 5-minute session now. And some guys came out, plopped their Mac down, built a web app, and launched a business on the podium, and then ended at 5 minutes. I was like, ah, bah, bah. Right? That's the pace, and that pace is going to keep picking up. It's not going to stay on the web. That pace is going to be in everything. We're going to be seeing this content flying at us at just this incredibly rapid rate. So, I ventured off into this strange excursion watching these guys working. These are the bits that I took away. So I'm just going to offer them up to you as, you know, if you're currently working on your business model or figuring out what to make next, you might want to, you know, look at these, because I'm certainly going to be doing things this way. And in fact, I have been doing things this way. Been doing it with our startup for the last, almost a year now. And you know what? Sure enough, we're working, I would guess something like 5 to 10 times faster. Okay, it's more nimble, and it's also a lot more fun to work there. It's a more creative environment. It's just zippy, right? This right here is the core list. Instrument everything. Don't bother building giant design documents. Don't vet things and check over review checklists and focus group. Put it out there. See what works. They'll forgive you if it sucks. Especially if you have a good relationship with them. If they like you, they'll let you say, nah, that doesn't work. Why don't you try this? And you watch what they do, and you change it. Don't get hung up on the looks. Have you guys noticed that all these Web 2.0 websites use just flat blocks? And everybody likes it. It's the new web aesthetic, is these flat, solid colors, right? They load fast. People can get in and out quick. Hey, it's a good thing. Figure out how to be occupying niches, and lots of niches. You know? Game Tunnel also finds that each one of their games tends to sell at least once a day. So what's their answer? Make lots and lots and lots and lots of games, because every single one sells once a day. The more they have, the better. And you got to find a way to stand out in the noise. Be cool. Wear a pirate hat. You know, whatever it takes. And finally, you know, maybe if we can all shift to this, not only will we be having a bit more fun and actually connecting with our customers instead of building overblown, sterile games, but maybe at that point we'll actually be also able to get out from the thumbs of the closed environment publishing platforms. Yes, mobile, I'm thinking of you. Where the creative shit never makes it to people's eyes and never makes it to people's hands. The whole problem with the broadcast model is that your work mostly doesn't get seen. Even if you have a hit game, it's just not broadly distributed enough because everything's closed up. So that was my take. But, you know, if you're curious about this stuff, I encourage you to wander out into the whole Web 2.0 world, because I just barely scratched the surface, and there is so much written out there on this stuff. So, that's it.